Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to the ISF and Film and Stuff podcast. My name, of course, is Carl, and with me, as always, my co-host, Miss Rachel. Say hello, Miss Rachel.
Hello, Miss Rachel.
There she is. And tonight we are very, very happy to welcome back to the podcast a friend of the podcast and someone we adore, Mr. Kenan Walker, actor and duckmaster at the Peabody Hotel in Memphis, and all around good guy. Hey, Kenan, how are you, man? Okay, you're breaking up a little bit. Say that again, my friend.
Can you hear me now?
No.
Vaguely. Still no.
Call back.
Oh, my goodness.
Call back.
I'll give you a call back.
Okay, folks. So here in just a moment, we are going to have the nationally famous Kenan Walker visiting with us. Not only is he the most amazing and iconic duckmaster that they've ever had at the Peabody Hotel. If you don't know what that means, Google it, okay? Seriously, just Google it, because you have to see videos. You have to watch this shit. It's beautiful. He is also an actor. I believe he's had some help in writing some things that he's been a participant in recently. He does music. He does promoting. He is just an all-around jack-of-all-trades, amazing dude. Plus, it doesn't hurt that he's one of the nicest guys in Memphis. Seriously, like, I love this dude. I met him many, many years ago when I was just staying at the hotel, and he took such amazing care of me that I was like, we can't not be friends after this. And it turns out that beyond just being a regular cool-ass person, he does a lot of really cool-ass things in his life, like act in major movies and be friends with, like, David Arquette and shit. And he's going to talk about that more with us here in just a bit. He's going to call back in.
Here he is.
And
here he
there
is.
We go.
Are
hey,
you
I'm back
now? Can you hear me?
Okay, cool. Now I can hear you. Now, before we get started, I need to do something. I warned you about this. It was Kenan's birthday just a couple days ago. So, Kenan, you might want to get your earplugs out, but here you go. One, two, three. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Kenan. Happy birthday to you and many more. There you go, sir.
Thank you, man. I sincerely appreciate
quiet,
it.
Oh, you Rachel.
And my present to you,
Kenan,
was me not singing that song. I promise you, that was a great present, and you're welcome.
No, I got to give Carl credit, man. Like that was much better than I was anticipating. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
You're very welcome, sir. You're very welcome. So, let's see. You're still currently duckmasting. You're still you've got a new movie out. You've got something to do with Bozo the Clown. You have to tell us about that. So, just start, sir. Tell me what's going on.
Well, yeah, man, like I said, everything that you mentioned, I'm still the Duckmaster at the Peabody Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee, and, you know, loving that. More and more people are coming to see the ceremony, you know, which I'm loving. And just recently CNN just aired a story about the history of the Peabody Ducks and me that I was featured on. And that just really kind of kicked things up to a whole other level. You know what I mean? The appearance on the game show To Tell the Truth, you know, that really – you know, millions of people watch, you know, to tell the truth. So a lot of people started coming and recognizing me because of that. But when this CNN story aired, you know, that's world news. You know what I mean? So now I'm the guy that they see on CNN. So the level of recognition is just insane, which I, in a good way, you know, which I sincerely appreciate.
Yeah.
But things are definitely at an all-time high as far as, you know, Duckmaster is concerned. But the Reaper Man, I'm saying the Reaper Man, which is my very, very first starring role in a film, you know, just was released worldwide on all streaming sites. Well, everywhere that you can rent or purchase movies online, on demand, you know, it was released worldwide, and it was such a pleasant surprise because this film, you know, it's a little no budget. I ain't going to say low budget. It was a no budget indie film that a small group of people came together to make just out of love. And we had such a great experience, such a bonding experience making this film. And it's the first time I've ever played a kind of a supernatural character. And we filmed the entire movie in 9 days. 9 days. You know what I mean? And the finished product, I was just so blown away with just, you know, how high quality it was for it to be a no-budget film. You know what I mean? And the story was well-written. The acting was great. And it's just a film that I'm just proud of. You know, even if nobody had ever seen it, I was just proud of this film. But then what happened was some major studios started expressing interest in purchasing the distribution rights to put our film out. And it just was, I think our highest hope was maybe to enter it into a film festival or two. But when we ended up going with a company called Gravitas Ventures, which is a pretty major indie studio. And they started the promotion for the movie. I think it was March 16th. So I've been doing a bunch of interviews for that. And it released everywhere April 18th. You know, so it's available on demand, on iTunes, on Amazon, anywhere online where you can rent or purchase movies. The Reaper Man is available right now.
Well, welcome to now, the wonderful world of micro-budget filmmaking, my friend. That's we really do a lot with directors and filmmakers of that type. So, this is the perfect place for it. Go ahead, Rach.
Okay, so I have to ask something. I was just recently raptured while we were talking about the Reaper Man, and I am sorry if you have covered this already, but I have to ask, are you the Reaper Man?
Well, I think that you have to watch the film to find that out. You know, I don't want to spoil anything.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay, no spoilers. No spoilers.
Yeah, I don't want to cheapen the experience of you finding that on your own. But I will say that the character, I'll give you a rundown. I'll give you a rundown with the film. I play a character named Joseph. And Joseph is newly married to his beautiful bride, Jessica, who was played by the amazing Jessica Johnson. Her name is Jessica J. Johnson in real life. But she portrays the character of Jessica. And that's a newlywed couple who, you know, pretty much trying to figure out, you know, how to build a good life together. Something tragic happens during a home invasion that takes Joseph through a very, very crucial transformation by having gone through this process. So we'll say that because of this tragedy that happens during a home invasion, Jessica is left grieving. And missing her husband, we'll say that. And through the grief and through the pain of having her other half ripped from her, she goes through a process to see if there's a way for him to come back. You know, by visiting a woman, a character named Sheba, who is played by the late Tarsha Gibson. You know, Tarsha just passed away a couple months ago.
I know.
It was one of her last projects. So she goes
so
to see a woman named
Sheba.
Yeah, I am too. I'm sorry to even express it, but at the same time, I'm so proud that she's in this film because it makes the film more special. And the character that she plays in it is such a pivotal character that is. I'm just proud that I was able to share this this platform with her in this project. But the character she plays performs a ritual, but basically. Let's Jessica know, look, if this works, I can't guarantee it's going to be the same person that left you. He has to agree to come back. Some certain things have to line up right. And And you'll have to watch the movie to see if those things lined up right or not.
Well, I can't wait. Like I said, before we actually got on air, we were talking, and I was like, look, I haven't bought it yet, but today was payday. So I'm about to be one of those amazing people on your Facebook page that's like showing my support. I got Reaper Man. Because not only do I love that you were in it, I just love everything that you were doing. I mean, wait a second. Was this the one that was filmed in Memphis?
Yeah, we filmed this in Memphis and in Jackson, Tennessee.
Okay, see, and that's another thing that I love, because I know that I am not a, quote, native Memphian, but it's always been my second home. And now that I actually live here, I am so Memphis proud, because this city is amazing. And so when I'm able to point stuff out, like I saw a show recently, Agent Elvis, and when they're driving down Beale Street and driving through Memphis, it's their animated map of Memphis is correct. And I love it. I was showing that to my kids. I was like, remember when we drove down here? Remember this? Remember this? And they were like, oh, my God. So, yes, I love, and I have been telling people this, obviously not recently because my brain forgot and I couldn't remember, but I thought that was the case, that this is the movie that was filmed in Memphis. I love horror to begin with. I love you, like, 100%. So this is just perfect for me, and I can't wait until tonight after this podcast, because when I put the kids to bed, I'm putting a new movie on.
There you go.
I appreciate it. Next, and I really hope you enjoy it. You know what I mean? I appreciate you for supporting it.
Oh, absolutely. So it sounds to me like a variation of an old story called The Monkey's Paw.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're just saying...
I'm not familiar with that one.
Well, basically...
Yep.
Basically, it's the same plot of your movie, but it's been done several times. Probably the most famous movie is Death Dream, which was about a soldier who went to Vietnam who came back, who wasn't exactly the way he left. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think the premise of things maybe not going exactly the way that you wanted them to is definitely a trope for a good reason. But I also think what Keenan is trying to say is that they're doing it in a different way.
Yeah. You know what? I would definitely say that with the Reaper Man, most of the reviews that I've seen or whatever, they make a lot of comparisons to Candyman. You know what I mean? But one of my biggest inspirations, while creating this character was The Crow, with Brandon Lee. Now that movie, to me, that was such a
Did you just ask a woman who loves horror movies if she's familiar with The Crow? I mean, Jesus Christ, that's got like internet free rent in my spank bank.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, The Crow was always just a beautifully haunting, love story to me, what I'm saying? And, of course, Brandon Lee was killed making that movie. But that was one of my biggest inspirations, in The Reaper Man. Because if I had to compare it to anything, I would probably say The Crow meets JD's Revenge meets Candyman. They know there's maybe the three of those, but it's a completely unique story. You know what I mean? So there's revenge elements there.
Yeah, now you got me.
I love those old school horror flicks. Jason Revenge is one of my favorites. But
100% here for that.
Yeah, so it's like it's a dark, chilling love story, but a revenge tale, but also. A story between, a story basically detailing sometimes the closest people to you are the people that you need to keep your eye on. So it's a lot of layers to this film. And it's really just a very well-written script, well-developed characters. And it's a fun ride, just watching the film. It's a fun ride.
you do tend to pick more layered characters. I've noticed that.
Yeah, but
even if it's
like,
just like a fucking weird commercial that you're doing, there's like depth to your characters. So I am so looking forward to this because, you know, I have seen you in a lot of shorter pieces, like short films and commercials and things like that. I want to see you more in movies, like in leading roles, because, dude, like, you own it. That is
I appreciate it. I've got, you know, some other projects, you know, coming out. Now, this being my first starring one, but, yeah, I definitely have some more stuff that that's coming out that are pushing me more toward leading man status. Of course, this is my first leading role. But I just finished a film called Damaged Goods. You know, I just finished filming that about three weeks, almost a month ago. And this one is it's like a crime, a detective story. And it's like if you took the film noir time period and mixed that with the black exploitation period, then this is what Damaged Goods would be. So it's like a stylized detective story. So if you took Humphrey Bogart and John Shaft and mashed those two characters together, then you would have the lead role of a character named Detective Charles Harlan, who's a private investigator. I mean, in that movie, Charles Harlan is hired to find a kidnapped girl, right? I play Mr. Bone, Cornelius Bonefield, a.k.a. Mr. Bone. I'm the villain in the movie. Mm-hmm. So I'm the co-star, you know what I mean, in that film. And it's my character who's kidnapped this girl for a ransom. But it turns out that she is the daughter of a business associate of Mr. Bones that ran off with some money and ended up getting killed. So he's kidnapped her daughter to get that money back. Charles Harlan has been hired to investigate the kidnapping, but it turns out that Charles Harlan is the person who killed this girl's father. So he's been hired to find the daughter of the man that he killed. So I'll just leave those elements out there. But that's another one coming up. That was a lot of fun making that.
You said film noir and fucking blaxploitation, and immediately there were four different people in this podcast group that got a major hard on, okay? I'm just saying. And I'm not even one of them. I just got a major stiffy because Keenan's doing another movie, and yes, I just shamelessly love it when you're on the screen, dude. So this next movie, I can already tell you, there's four other people in this podcast that are going to want to be doing a commentary watch on it as soon as they are available. So
Take private detective stuff. That's a wheelhouse for me, big time. I want to go into just how busy have you been in the last 2 years? Good God, I'm checking your IMDb, and I know these aren't leading roles, but I see five features and one short and one TV movie. In like the last 2 years, since 2021.
Yeah.
So are there any of those that you want to particularly push and let people know where to find them? Queen Rising.
Queen Rising. That's such a phenomenal film. That was such a dope film. Queen Rising. That actually released in all the Malco theaters here in Memphis. You know, back in October.
Mm-hmm.
And we were
gonna go see it. But we couldn't go see it when Carl was here last year, and I feel like such a heel for having him miss that because I was so stoked too.
Well, I'm praying that, you know, it'll be out, you know, streaming for the world to see sometime soon. I'm not really sure exactly what's going on with the worldwide release of that, but having seen the movie five times in theaters, man, that movie is phenomenal. Like it's a psychological thriller, you know, that was filmed and based in Memphis, but it looks like a Hollywood film that is set in Memphis, so it makes Memphis look so good. And like I said, it's a psychological thriller about a young girl, about a young woman who was trying to save her parents' home from being foreclosed. So she's offered a book deal, you know what I'm saying, to tell her story about a series of murders that happened when she was in college called the College Town Slayings. So in the story, as she's creating this book, we're reliving her story of her in college when these series of murders happened. So, but yeah, so it's about a series of murders that happened on this murder on this college campus. And
now,
very very much like Scream almost.
It felt like that. And didn't you guys film that at what, like Rhodes?
Well, yeah, I think Rhodes and Christian Brothers University were like the school locations. I mean, but my
character,
I play the head of campus security.
Yeah, CBC and Christian Brothers College, which is CBC, that's where my daddy's an alum, and Rhodes, where my godmother is from and all of that, they are two of the most beautiful campuses. When I was a little kid, and you know, I grew up in Arkansas. I only moved to Memphis last year, so every time we drove through Memphis to see extended family, or when my mom and dad were still dating, like I always said that I wanted to go to school at CBC and Rhodes. And they were like, "Well, I don't think you can go to CBC." But, you know, maybe Rhodes if you really want. Like, you've got to work hard, but yeah. I ended up at a community college in Arkansas, but whatever. I still think those are some of the most beautiful places, and one of my favorite cafes is across the street from the field at Rhodes, so I love to go over there and meet my aunt for coffee and like look out at the college she used to go to because she has amazing stories.
Yeah, and beautiful campuses.
Oh yeah, and see, I want to hear some of your amazing stories from these beautiful places. So I don't know if that's going to be another show or what we need to do here.
Well, I can, like I said, well with Queen Rising, like I said, the locations, you know, there kind of definitely just helped to add to the feel of the story, because, you know, a good majority of it takes place, you know, on a college campus. So you really do get enthralled in that world. But as far as locations and projects that that connect with me personally, like as far as experiences I can share, let me think. I do have a project coming up, you know, that has to do with Bozo the Clown that was filmed in – It was filmed internationally. It was filmed in L.A., New York, Chicago, Atlanta, Detroit, and ended off in Memphis. And it is a documentary that has to do, and I'm kind of hesitant because I don't know how much I can reveal, but I'll say that it's public knowledge that David Arquette has purchased the rights to Bozo the Clown. I mean,
yes.
So
that. Like, I've read all the news stories.
Mm-hmm. So I know I can speak on that. So basically the documentary that we've completed is about David Arquette acquiring the rights to Bozo the Clown, but trying to reintroduce this brand to the world during a time when the world is terrified of clowns. You know what I mean? So the documentary, you know, is him on this journey to try to bring Bozo back and bring the kind clown back, you know, in a world where everyone's terrified of clowns.
And
you
that's what I was going to say is, you know, what I've read from it is that he's trying, like you just said, to bring the kindness of clowns and Bozo and things like that. Like, I've never understood why people were scared of clowns, but I guess, you know, I'm weirded out by dolls sometimes.
Well, you know, there is William James Gacy. There's a number of things. There's the clown from Pennywise.
John Wayne
and
Gacy.
And so on and so forth. And John Wayne Gacy. And all of this, you know, added to that. Now, I grew up, you know, I'm older than both of you. And I grew up in the 60s. I remember Bozo the Clown. I also remember Emmett Kelly very well, and in fact, I have been a clown. And I mean in makeup. Okay, I'm a clown otherwise, generally, but I'm talking actual clown. But the thing here is that we have lost that sense of fun with a clown, and everybody's terrified. And I tell you what, I do not envy David because it's so ingrained in our culture now to be afraid of clowns. I mean, one of my favorite movies is Killer Clowns from Outer Space. They're
both fun, me too.
But
like
they're deadly, right? You know, I mean, but I remember, you know, Ed Sullivan seeing Emmett Kelly and just being amazed. Another thing is people aren't really fond of mimes either. You know, and that's
which are like French clowns, which means they're just unshaven and unfunny.
Well, there's all sorts of clowns. There's rodeo clowns. Don't forget, if you really want to learn about clowns, watch Bobcat Goldthwait Shakes the Clown. There's like strata of clowns and cast.
There's so many clowns. But I remember being a little kid, and there was one point when I was very young. I don't remember it, but I have been told about it. I was on the Bozo Show, and I remember in my very, very early formative years, Bozo being the staple on morning television, and me loving Bozo. And weirdly enough, my mom even went to prom with the Arkansas Bozo's nephew. Because, you know, they were different Bozos for different time zones. But, yeah, Mom went to prom with Arkansas Bozo's nephew. And, yeah, like, it was such a formative thing for me because after Bozo, I watched Pee-wee. And I haven't ever told anybody this. So, live revelation on air. Kenan, your episode of To Tell the Truth, when I saw David Arquette and
Paul Rubens.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Paul Rubens doing the clown thing and then discussing Bozo. My heart exploded that day.
And that's really, to be honest with you, the a big connecting point with the documentary, because my friendship with David Arquette, you know, he's best friends with Paul Rubens, you know what I mean, and the whole way I even ended up on To Tell the Truth was because, and this is prior to me knowing this, but David told Paul Rubens about me. Paul researched me, loved what he found, started following me on Instagram, which, again, blew my mind because I had, 300 followers at that time. And I'm looking, it says, Pee Wee Herman just started following you. And the kid in me, they grew up watching Pee Wee's Playhouse and Pee Wee's Big Adventure and Big Top Pee Wee. You know what I'm saying? I was like, Pee Wee Herman is following me? I'm like, yo,
okay,
Pee Wee
so
Herman
Kenan
is following me? And then the next thing I know, he posted a video of me marching the ducks on his page. I was like, what
I
the
think
hell?
You're
Pee-wee
roughly
Herman.
The same age as me. I'm 37, maybe 38. I can't ever remember, but so
yeah, I just turned 43.
I think you're. So yeah, you remember back in the day when Pee-wee Herman and Bozo the Clown were on early in the morning.
Yeah, I grew up on both of them.
It was like
both of them. Yeah, I grew up on the WGN, the Bob Bell Bozo, the one that was in Chicago. Yeah, I used to watch that every morning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was a big deal. And then Pee-wee's Playhouse, see, that was a staple. You know, Pee-wee Herman was like in the 80s, you know what I'm saying? Like, an icon. You know what I mean? I remember Pee-wee Herman hosting the MTV Video Music Awards, and RoboCop came out, and Ed 209 or whatever. It was a big thing around that. It was huge back in the 80s. If y'all don't know what I'm talking about, those who are listening in, to type in, go to YouTube, Pee-wee Herman host the MTV Video Music Awards, and you'll see RoboCop and his whole crazy entrance he did to host the show as far as Pee-wee Herman. That was iconic. But if you know, I challenge you, if you don't know what I'm talking about, to YouTube Pee-wee Herman host his Video Music Awards. It'll blow your mind.
Absolutely. But don't look at what he did to stop being Pee Wee Herman for a while, because that was some bullshit. Anyway, yeah. I remember, and you remember, because we're both about the same age, when it was Pee Wee Herman, when it was fucking all of this, when it was Bozo the Clown in the morning. And Bozo the Clown didn't usually air on Saturdays. He only aired Monday through Friday in the very early morning after, like, Shepherd's Chapel and all that shit. You'd get to see some Bozo, and it was like your reward for sitting through the really boring prayers and Pledge of Allegiance.
Bozo was the world's
really
most famous clown. Yeah, Bozo was an iconic, you know, character. He was really the world's most famous clown. And at one point, there were over 100 different Bozos in different regions, you know, across the country and in Mexico and overseas, because the Larry Harmon, who bought the rights to Bozo, you know, back in like the early 1900s, when it was just a radio show and a cartoon, he trained people on how to be Bozos in different regions. So there were different versions of Bozo all over the country, you know what I'm saying? But Larry Harmon owned Bozo the Clown, and he himself played Bozo the Clown as well. But so David Arquette bought the rights from the Larry Harmon estate, you know what I mean? So, but again, this is because he grew up loving clowns. His father was a character named Butter the Clown when he grew up. So his whole family, you know, him and Rosanna and Patricia and Roman and, you know, all of his siblings grew up, you know, dressed as clowns and loving the circus. So David just has his pure love and, you know, love for kindness and the clowns and Bozo. And he fought for like 15 years to acquire the rights to Bozo the Clown, which he now owns. Turns out the paperwork was completed on the day that we met, you know, three years ago. And so in this documentary, it basically follows him trying to reinvigorate this brand, but then also choosing the people he's going to do it with. So there's a woman named Jessica, you know what I mean, who plays Jozo Bozo, you know what I mean? So she's the first female Bozo and the first Bozo of color, you know what I mean? So it's him connecting with her and then the creation of that character. And then there's a guy named Gabe, you know what I'm saying, who plays Nunu Bozo, you know what I mean? So you have the creation of his character. But in the documentary, they come to Memphis to recruit Duckmaster Keenan, who was on to tell the truth with David Arquette, while he was dressed as a clown, you know, I mean, in a different segment. They could come recruit Duckmaster Keenan to be this ringmaster of the Bozo Venture. So in the documentary, you'll see they come to Memphis to recruit me to be this new character. And I don't want to divulge who my character is. I will say I'm not a clown, but I am a symbol of something. I'm a symbol of kindness. And I'm a symbol of something that when young people, you know, hopefully when they look up to me, I mean, especially young people from my communities, I mean, when they look up and see the creation of this character, I will say it's something regal. It's something that commands respect. And it's a representation of kindness. And he's the ringleader of this new Bozo adventure. So that's what that documentary is. So as far as, I guess, the long way to answer a short question about locations, you know, we shot all over Memphis. We shot in, I took them on Beale Street. I took them, you know, through Stacks, you know what I'm saying? But then I took them through Memphis. I took them through the hood, you know what I'm saying? And we did a few things that will be entertaining and shocking at the same time when people see it in the documentary. Like, they really went and did that? Like, this man is fearless. Like, they really went there and did that? But it's all based in kindness. So so the whole basis of the project is to show encounters, you know, with people who start off maybe fearful when they see this, and then the transformation they go through by realizing that there's nothing to be afraid of. So I'm anxiously waiting to see the end result.
I have a weird question for you, but like, I'm really involved with the schools in this community. I live out in Berkeley, so you know probably where I am. Is this project something that you might be interested in showing to, like, some of the school children out here and stuff?
Well, I mean, I'm sure they the kids would love it, you know what I mean? But I'm not really in control of it. I mean, that's David's venture. You know what I mean? So, like I said, I'm really just waiting on that to come together to see, you know, what this direction he decides to go. But if that can be an option, absolutely. Absolutely. Because it's really about, you know, reiterating kindness to the kids, you know, through clowns, which have always
they've got a lot of programs in the schools right now that are talking about kindness and violence and things like that. And I have two school-aged kids. I have a 5 and a 13-year-old about to be 6 and 14. And, you know, they go to different schools in different districts for weird reasons. But, you know, a lot of their after-school programs that they're doing, like the mentoring program that my oldest is in, sponsored by the Grizzlies. Yay, Memphis Grizzlies. That's what they focus on is just showing how to make the world a better place through kindness. So,
well, I know that's definitely David's, you know, agenda is to, you know, put more kindness back in the world. So I'm pretty sure that, you know, if it can be done, then I'm sure he would love to show it to the school kids or make it to parents. Because, I mean, cause keep in mind, this is just the documentary. This is going to be an ongoing venture. Like I said, it'll be a slow burn, I'm sure, because we live in a much different world than when Bozo was, you know, the world's most famous clown. But the documentary is the story of the acquisition of the Bozo project and trying to reinvigorate it. But then outside of that, you know, there's plans for, you know, to bring the cartoon back, to bring a Bozo cartoon, to put that together. There's a live show, try to bring back the Bozo the Clown show to a certain extent. But, you know, bring back the grand prize game and all that, you know, all that. And then a traveling exponent where there'll be live shows. People can come to the Bozo Circus. You know what I mean? So the goal is to really bring that back. And the ironic thing is overseas, clowns are still popular. Like, people still love clowns in Europe and all these other places overseas. So there's a huge following. As a matter of fact, there's a Brazilian Bozo right now that's working with us, or we're working with David. That's down there killing it. Like, you know, I'm seeing all kind of footage of, I think his name is Paulo Bozo, but he's the Brazilian Bozo. And I'm seeing all this footage of him posting, like, popping up with kids events and this and that. Yeah, I mean, and it's just dope to see that overseas, you know, all these kids are loving Bozo, but that's an extension of this venture. So, you know, it's exciting to be a part of it. And the fact that now I can say that I'm personal friends with Bozo the Clown and Pee Wee Herman. Growing up in the 80s, you know, this is really iconic to me. Like, now, like, Paul wished me a happy birthday. You know, for the last 3 years, he makes it a point to wish me a happy birthday on my birthday. You know what I mean? He sends Christmas cards. And it's just, he's just a really good guy. Paul and David are just, you know, two of the best people I've ever met. But David is just, you know, me crossing paths with him was such a huge, huge blessing because he's just a genuine person. Like, he's just one of the most kind and genuine people that I know, and his heart is in the right place. And like, when he believes in you and he loves you, then, you know, it's like there's not anything he won't do for you. So the stuff that he's done for me as far as opportunities that have come since I've met him, just in the over three years I've met him, you know, this Bozo project is one of them. I think if you look at my IMDb, you'll see a credit for a television series called High Heel, which is a crime drama where I play a character named Detective Musa. Well, David Arquette is in that as well, along with Tyga and Elise Neal. Post Malone is an executive producer of that. Dre London, you know, so that's being shopped around. You know, my connection with David, you know, led to that audition for me, which led me to that role. In my first Hollywood film, a movie called Way Down Bundy, which I filmed 2 Octobers ago. Now, Steve Guttenberg is in that movie. Talk about the 80s, Steve Guttenberg is in that movie. But David's wife, Christina Arquette, is one of the executive producers on that film. So these people, along with another woman named Carrie Ann Rochman and Kate Vanoff, you know, these are all people that I've crossed paths with organically that have, you know, just taken me in and just really believe in my talent and my spirit so much that they have helped to push me forward and projects they're involved in, while on the flip side, stuff like The Reaper Man and Queen Rising and Damaged Goods, these were stuff that I had already going on my end. So it's just like things are just multiplying tenfold while being Duckmaster at the same time. it's been a juggling act, but it's a dream come true because, again, I'm doing it all with no agent. I don't have an agent. I don't have a manager. I don't have a publicist. I don't have a team of people creating opportunities for me. It just really came from just staying persistent, you know, building bonds on current projects and them actually leading to future projects.
So I'm going to go ahead and say it for you because you're not allowed to say it, but right now, the way things are going for you are doing so well because you have been a straight BAMF, and I do mean badass motherfucker BAMF, and you have done this for yourself. So don't forget that you're allowed to take credit for how awesome you represent yourself. You don't need other people because you are so amazing that these opportunities open up for you organically.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
And
that is
why you're a friend of this show, is because you are one of the most amazing people we know. And you have been here so many times, and every time you have something new and amazing to tell us. And I just want to thank you for that. And thank you for representing our city like the BAMF you are.
Yeah, man. I appreciate it, man. Like it's an honor, man, to, I guess, be at this point, I guess my path has led me into kind of being a Memphis ambassador, you know what I'm saying? And the fact that at this moment, you know, I'm able to represent Memphis in a positive way when there's so much that is being shed on Memphis as far as the negativity worldwide,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? To be a bright spot. But yeah, you know what I'm saying? So to be like a bright spot of something positive coming out of Memphis, you know what I mean? And
well,
that's an honor. It really is.
Something I want to talk about. We haven't really talked about in terms of, it seems one of the things that I noticed from you specifically going through your Facebook page and the way you speak in that, there seems to be a real faith involved. And there's something there that I really think is a wonderful thing. Because it leads you into wanting to be kind and that. And that's a lot different than a lot of people that get into, you know, the acting business and so on and so forth or any business, you know. And I just wanted to know how that has transpired in your life. I also know we talked about this last time that you're the nephew of Olanda Draper, who was a great – gospel artist too. So just tell me hold on, Rachel. Just let me know how all that sort of like permeates your worldview and that, because it's very apparent that it does.
Yeah, and thank you for asking me that too, man, because my entire, and I even hesitate to call it a career because I didn't plan it. You know what I'm saying? I didn't get an agent to build a career. Like everything that's happened in my life that I share with people is just a testimony. You know what I'm saying? Like, of course, like you mentioned, my uncle was Orlando Draper, and he was my biggest male influence. He was the person who showed me that these amazing things were possible, you know, in someone's life. But from a child's perspective, you know what I'm saying, my uncle had a choir, and then they traveled around. They went to a bunch of different places, gained notoriety. By the time I was 18, you know, he had taken me on the road, you know what I'm saying. I used to, you know, do a lot of music. You know, I still, you know, do my music, but it's more of an outlet than anything. But he would let me perform, like, with the choir in front of, like, 10, 15,000 people writing raps to their songs. And he would put me on stage and showcase me and put me, you know, in front of these huge crowds. But I was 18 when he passed, you know what I'm saying? And when he passed away, I was going through a lot at that time. So I felt very alone, and I had exhausted every option I felt like I could create for myself, and nothing was working. You know what I mean? But it was something about once I gave up trying to control everything and once I just got out my own way. And it's been a slow process. I'm not saying it was an overnight thing. But when I realized I have a purpose, like I'm here for some reason. There's situations that I've been in that it makes no sense that I'm here to tell the story. It's, you know, it's there's been so many examples of how God has spared my life. You know what I'm saying? It made me realize, okay, I'm here for something. There's reason that I'm here. But I always knew that acting, you know, it was an outlet for me because I didn't have to focus on the darkness or the negative things that my life was at that time. I could be someone else. I could step into their shoes and look from their perspective. And it made me want to build the backstory to those characters, which is a part of the craft anyway. But it was therapeutic for me. That outlet gave me the opportunity to clear my head and be someone else and to aspire to be something else. And the more I appreciated that, the better I became at that and the better I was received while doing that. And people just saw that I was doing what I was doing for a different reason. But every single project, you know what I'm saying, except for maybe a handful, there wasn't a plan. I wasn't shooting for that role. If I auditioned, it was, you know, because it was an opportunity presented itself. It didn't matter if I got it or not. But then it got to a point where I wasn't having to audition for stuff as often because of bonds built on the things I was cast in. I built bonds with people and connected and have relationships with people that went on to make other projects and wanted me to be a part of their next project. I mean, or referred me for someone else's project that was looking for a certain type. And my career just kind of built from there. And then acting led me to the Civil Rights Museum through a living history tour at 26 years old when I was playing some fictional character named Randy, who was on the bus and Rosa Parks wouldn't get up. And it inspired me being there so much that I wanted to stay and become a tour guide. So that sparked something else in me to want to teach our history from where Dr. King gave his life, but it made me conscious of the fact that I need to be the sharpest version of me to do that if I'm going to be a gatekeeper of our history, teaching that from the Lorraine Motel. So it made me a better man. It made me represent myself better. It made me conscious of how I speak or how I carry myself. It made me stand up straighter. It made me conduct myself with a little bit more pride. And I took that into my artistry as well. You know what I'm saying? So every opportunity that has come from me trying to be a better version of me has been a testimony, you know what I'm saying? But those testimonies are the films that we're talking about. My testimony are the projects that you see, the short films, the commercials that you see. Those are my testimonies.
What else is a testimony? What you do as the Duckmaster too. Because every time I see you as the Duckmaster, you're welcoming people there. You are an emissary for Memphis. Mm-hmm. And you know it, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm very, very conscious of that because, again, I'm making history being in that position because a lot of people don't realize it was a black man named Edward Pembroke who started that whole ceremony in 1940. He was a bellman who was hired in 1940, you know, inside of a segregated hotel to be a bellman. Just so happened that he was an animal trainer in the circus as a young man, and they had three ducks that lived in the fountain because 7 years earlier, the general manager and a friend of his had a little bit too much to drink on a duck hunting trip and decided to bring these duck decoys back inside and leave them in there overnight, and it became a staple to have these ducks live in the fountain. Edward Pembroke came in and knew how to train them. He knew how to train those ducks and make the tradition of ducks living in the fountain into a ceremony. And that ceremony is still going on today. But since Edward Pembroke, there haven't been any official duck masters who have looked like me until me. I'm the second official African-American duck master since the man who started it in 1940. But when I went to work at the Peabody, I went to work as a concierge. I didn't go there to be duck master. I've never applied to be duck master. There's not an application for duck master with my name on it anywhere that exists. I went to go to work as a concierge. 3 months after I started as the concierge, I'm saying the duck master who was there, a guy named Anthony, his wife had a baby, and he retired. The assistant duck master to him was an older man named Doug, but Doug happened to have been the hotel historian. When he found out that I was a historian, every day Doug would march the ducks, he would come over to the concierge stand, and we'd talk. And we'd just pick each other's brains, and we became friends. So when Anthony retired, Doug became the official duck master, and then he came up to me and offered me the assistant duck master position. And I told him no three times. I'd just been promoted to the club floor concierge a week before that. I thought I was going to have to deal with all this criticism and all these this hate from people who didn't come here to see me do that, if you understand what I'm saying. So I had this notion of what I thought I was going to have to deal with inside those walls. from the people in there. You know what I'm saying? And for the most part, it's been nothing like that. You know what I mean? It's been nothing like that. You know what I mean? But once I finally told Doug yes, he retired less than a year later. That was January 2020. You know what I'm saying? February 2019, I became the assistant duck master. January 2020, I became the official duck master. You know, I did that for a couple months. In March, we all know what happened. The pandemic hit. World changed for everybody. I mean, I was furloughed, you know what I'm saying? But when I got back to work, the Duck March was one of the only things that there was to do. Everything was closed. Movie theaters closed, parks closed, restaurants operating at like 30%, Beale Street's closed. There's nowhere you can go. So, I mean, so that's when I noticed that being in this position was in turn not just being entertaining for people, it was therapeutic for them. They had somewhere they could
go. Yeah, and I have to mention, I understand why, but the duck ceremonies were closed to the outside public for a long time. Like, if you didn't have a booking at the hotel, you couldn't go see them. And I totally get it. And I am glad that the Peabody did something like that, because I came to the Peabody and met you, I think, like, right before the pandemic happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it was one of
things. Yeah, that was still club floor concierge there.
Yeah, you were. And you were Duckmaster, but you were still club floor concierge there.
I was the assistant Duckmaster and club floor concierge then. Yep.
Yeah, and that's when I was like, wait a second, I know the Duckmaster? What? Because, you know, we hung out afterwards. Like, we hung out after hours with a couple of other friends from the hotel. And, you know, it was fun times. But,
right.
Yeah, I actually have other, I'm sure I told you, but I have other connections to the Peabody, in that my godmother is the woman who did the gold painting on the ceilings.
Ah, okay. That's iconic.
Yeah, so she did all the gilt work and, like, the entrances and stuff. And so, you know, I've always had, like, a special affinity for that place. And then being able to stay there in one of the nicest rooms on the nicest floor and meet, like, the nicest dude ever, i.e. you. It just, like, it's an amazing experience. And it makes me so happy to see that such an amazing person is going on to do such amazing things, so that I can show everybody, see, like, I know this person, and you remember when I told you they were so awesome to me? See, they are a really awesome person. Ha ha.
I appreciate that. I mean,
you're giving
me
bragging rights, Keenan. Thank you.
No, yeah, I mean, absolutely. But I'm just grateful. I mean, I'm grateful that I'm worthy of being bragged on, because again, none of this was my plan. You know what I mean? Like, when I say I'm operating in purpose. Like the fact that I can now say I'm a SAG actor, and I've done my first Hollywood film. I've been to Hollywood twice and was sent for both times, but I don't have an agent. You know what I mean? To me, it lets me know that there was a plan for my life, that it was meant for me to get to a certain point by going through my journey the way that I was purposed to, not the same way everybody else did. And I'm not knocking nobody who's got an agent and is doing it the traditional way. I'm sure it would have been much easier to do it that way. But that's if I had a plan. I didn't have a plan. I just wanted to do good work. I wanted to put my all into the work that I was given, and I wanted to be conscious of what I didn't do. I mean, I have the spirit of discernment, so I did have my prerequisites. I need to know what this character is about. Let me read the script. Do you have anything that you shot before, so I know what the quality is going to be like? Because when you do film, that's forever. That's going to outlive me. You know what I'm saying? So I'm very conscious of what I attach my talent and my image to. But the fact that it's led me here, you know what I'm saying? The thing that I'm most excited about is that when I talk to people, yeah, I can tell you I'm a film actor and this and that. But the thing is, I get to tell you the story behind it, the testimony, how I got there, the path that led you to what got me the recognition. That's what it's all about, is sharing the testimony and what the plan for my life was. The end result just means that what I'm saying is factual. The fact that there's a movie that you saw me in, or you came and saw the Duck March, that's just confirmation that I know what I'm talking about. And a lot of times people give you advice, but they don't have anything that they've done to validate what they're saying. It's just advice. You know what I'm saying? But when you see somebody who actually has something tangible that you can see, the level of attention you give them when they say, this is how it happened for me, might be a little higher because you just saw what it was they were in or why they came to speak. I just saw them in this movie. Now this person is telling me that he ain't got no agent. That don't make sense to me. Let me listen to what he's saying. Let me listen to what got him here, and maybe that could apply to me some kind of way. I'm all about just inspiring people through sharing my story, and my story is just a testimony. That's it.
See, that's one of the things that I can really like see in what you do. You know, I've been here 65 years, and I've had quite a journey, and it's about the journey. You have to be aware of the journey and aware of your choices and aware of how you deal with people and that, because it all comes back, you know, and you should reflect what you believe. And if you believe in kindness, then that should be reflected back on you. And that's the way I look at it too. So anyway, we're getting up, near the end of the hour, Keenan. So is there anything else as far as upcoming projects or that, or give us any type of promotion and things at this point that you want to go through?
Absolutely. Like we mentioned earlier, The Reaper Man is available everywhere that you would rent or buy movies online. So like I said, iTunes, Video On Demand, Amazon Prime, pretty much anywhere that you could get movies online. And again, it's a low-budget indie horror film, and but it was made with love, and I really hope people have a good time watching that. So that's out now. Just finished filming Damaged Goods, which is in post-production now, so keep your eyes and ears open. Queen Rising, psychological thriller, filmed in Memphis, based in Memphis, directed by Princeton James, who's a near and dear brother of mine. That film is completed, has been screened in Memphis, but will hopefully be released to the world very soon, so definitely keep your eyes and ears open for that. The Bozo Project with David Arquette is in post-production, so hopefully you'll be hearing more news about that very soon. Way Down Bundy, my first Hollywood film that Steve Guttenberg is in. You know what I mean? I know that some people are like, who? If you grew up in the 80s, you know who I'm talking about. You know who Steve Guttenberg is. If you don't, do your research. But it's a big deal for me to say I'm in a movie with Steve Guttenberg. So Way Down Bundy, that should be coming out soon. And I've got a few other things that are coming up, but – you know, this, and of course, the Duck March. Duck March, the world-famous Peabody Hotel. That's a daily ceremony. I'm there Wednesday through Sunday. So you can definitely come down. It's a free event. You know, it's at 11 and 5, but you definitely want to be there 30 minutes in advance for both ceremonies. So 10:30 and 4:30. And then I guess we'll see where my path leads me from here.
Absolutely. Now, one other thing before we get into what we like to call housekeeping, if you're in contact with the people and Reaper Man, the producer, director, and that sort of thing, let them know I'd love to have them on. So we focus specifically on micro budget here. Let me know on that, because I'd love to have them, and that gives more promotion not just to you, but to the film
itself. Anybody.
Absolutely.
Actors, writers, directors, producers,
set designers,
set grip, best boy, whatever. We will talk to anybody that has been on the set of that movie.
Yeah, I would love that. Yeah, absolutely. The director's name is Jerron Lockridge, you know what I'm saying, who I have to repeat his name just so people can – Jerron Lockridge. You know what I'm saying? This man is one-man – the JaronLockridge. Jerron Lockridge. Man's got content, you know what I'm saying, Amazon, some stuff on Tubi. But when I say that he's a one-man crew, he writes, directs, shoots, edits, produces, location scouts, everything is him. I'm saying Reaper Man.
Oh, yeah.
He did all of this.
I want him on the show. Absolutely.
Message me after this and, like, maybe him too, and let him know that I would love to fangirl on him and talk more about his other projects.
Yeah, I would definitely do that, because I think that his journey would be one that, by sharing through your platform, that a lot of your listeners would get a lot out of, because he is phenomenal. Like, what he does with no money, you know what I'm saying? Like, I can only imagine you put a budget behind this dude, like, he would kill the game. Like, he's the truth. So I would definitely send him your way.
Oh, absolutely. We have a number of people that we push. There's a filmmaker down in New Orleans by the name of Joe Badon. There's one in L.A. What is Joe's name? But we have several of them. That we really push, and Alan Austin James and
Joe,
and Robert Walker
Joe
Jr.
Black.
Joe Black,
Robert
thank
Walker,
you.
Yeah.
You know, and so yeah, anything we can do to promote and help you guys, we really want to do it. Now, at this point in time, I do want to get into a little bit of what we like to call housekeeping.
Knock, knock, knock. Housekeeper.
Housekeeping. So just to give you an idea as to what's happening, we had a show set for tomorrow, but we're going to have to basically put that on hold because of some personal problems with one of our guests. And we do wish Steve Marshall lots of love in that with what he's going through right now. But tomorrow, we just lost someone very, very special to me, and that was Harry Belafonte. And
I did not know Harry Belafonte passed away, man.
Yeah, he passed
away.
Man, I
did not know that.
2 days ago, 96 years old. And so Rachel and I are going to be doing what? Pardon, Keenan?
He passed away on my birthday. I just realized that. That is crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry.
I have a picture with Harry Belafonte. I've met this man personally. I'm going to have to post that. I'm going to have to post that. I did not know he passed away.
Oh, my Lord.
Man. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Carl. I'm sorry.
No,
please.
By all means.
I just didn't know he died. I did not know he died, and me meeting him was one of the best experiences of my life. He was one of the kindest people. In the moment that I met him, like it was life changing, man. I did not know he died. So I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. So tomorrow, Rachel and I will be doing a commentary watch on one of his earlier films, which is The World, the Flesh, and the Devil, which is a film about three people. And post-apocalyptic Earth, who survive, and, of course, the tensions between them, Harry Belafonte being black and white woman and also a white man. And, of course, it reflects a lot of the social tensions of that period of time. It was made in 1959, and we're going to be doing that tomorrow. Also on Sunday... we have Rock This Town Radio with TC, and he's going to have Randy as his co-host this week. So I'm actually off this week. But they're going to be hitting the pavement. It's all going to be songs about roads, boulevards, streets, and so on and so forth. So they're going to be doing that on Sunday. On Monday, we have a very special podcast. We are welcoming Rhonda Jo Petty. If you do not know that name, let us just say that back in the day during the golden age of porn, she was a adult performer. We do these podcasts occasionally because we want to get out the stories of what they've done and how that has affected them and so on and so forth. And Rhonda will be with us on Monday. Or actually, forgive me, not on Monday, on Tuesday, May 2nd at 8 p.m. And we're very, very happy that she'll be on. Also, a good friend of ours, who's also a good friend of Rhonda's, will probably call in and share some time with us. and that's Gene Silver, who has been on the podcast many, many times, and we adore Gene. So there's that. We've got more things coming. I know that we'll have some shows with Vicki Love coming up. That was one of the shows that we had to postpone. And we've got more coming. So that's what's coming up in the next couple of days. So anything else, Keenan, before we get off the, and say goodnight?
I just want to say, rest in peace to Harry Belafonte and to my condolences to his family and all the endless amount of people that I know that he affected in his lifetime and his legacy, because that man is a real icon. And I know that, the brief time that I spent with him changed my life. It really, really had a deep impact on me. So I just want to, send condolences and a little much love and strength to those that he affected, which I know is, the world, basically, but especially to his family and loved ones.
Mm-hmm. And I would say one other thing, and we'll bring this up a little bit tomorrow, but I have a favorite film of Harry Belafonte. If you've never seen it, I recommend it highly. It's called The Angel of Venus.
Put out, me too.
It was put out in 1970, directed by a Czech emigre by the name of Jan Kadar, and also written by Bill Gunn, who gave us Ganja and Hess. Very, very art rotation film that was done in the 70s. And it co-stars Zero Mostel. And Harry Belafonte may or may not be a Jewish angel. We're not sure.
Mm.
And that's the setup. And it is a tremendous film. And actually,
what's the name of it again?
It's called The Angel Levine.
The Angel Levine.
And that's Levine. The Angel Levine, 1970. You can rent it on Amazon, but that is something I recommend very, very highly. It's not one of Harry's better known films, but I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Definitely, there you go.
All right. So
I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, no problem at all, Keenan. And as always, listen, you've got anything happening, all you have to do is contact either of us, and you're in like Flint on these podcasts. Don't even have to ask.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate both of y'all.
All right. So with that, we want to thank Keenan for being on. And as always, Rachel, it's always wonderful to have you on, and particularly today, because I can sit back and just sort of relax as you took over the show, and I love it. And it's great. So with that, we're going to say good night. Thank you very much again, Keenan. Thank you all for listening. And let's all say good night.
Good night.
Good night. Okay, and I guess Rachel was
guess you already went good night.
Yeah. So I'm saying good night for her too. Good night, everyone.
Yeah, good night. Thank
Thanks,
you again.
Keenan.
All right, bye-bye.